It's great to be speaking with TV adventurer and travel writer Charlie Borman. Hello, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Very nice to be here, I must say.
Thanks so much for being on. Now, a lot of your adventures on TV look as if they should appear in a feature film. So I guess it's no surprise to learn that you once acted in several feature films. Tell us about first stepping on set.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose my father is a film director, a guy called John Borman, and he directed films like Deliverance, Excalibur, and Hope and Glory, and all sorts of different films. And as a film director, as a British film director, he's one of the more sort of influential directors who sort of changed the course of filmmaking for the world, really. And I kind of grew up in that environment, and you know, I remember the first film I was ever. Film set I was ever on, I was in a film called Deliverance. I played a little Ed's boy at the end of the movie. And I kind of sort of got from there, and then Dad used to chuck us into all his movies as cheap cannon fodder. And we kind of went from there. And then because I'm dyslexic, I think I found it a nice way to be able to express myself, which I couldn't really do in school. And it kind of went from there. So I've acted for years, and that's how I met Ewan, was on a film set of a movie.
Yes, that's right.
And we sort of became lifelong friends from that and ended up doing all sorts of stuff with motorbikes and travelling around the world and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, film sets are renowned for waiting between takes. I guess it gave you the chance to share your mutual love of bikes with fellow actor Ewan McGregor. Is that when you decided to work together?
Well, I think it's like all these things. You know, it wasn't something that we sort of thought about overnight. It started off as, you know, riding our bikes down to Spain and meeting our kids and family down there on some beach somewhere. And then it kind of grew. And I suppose Ewan really was the one who sort of said, look, Charlie, I reckon we should ride around the world. And I quickly agreed that was a fabulous idea. And we kind of went from there. But it was a long sort of 2-year process before we managed to hook up with Russ Malkin and David, the guys who helped us produce it in the TV show. And so, you know, it wasn't one of those things that kind of came across quickly. It was quite a hard sort of battle to get there once we decided we wanted to do it.
Yes, like everything in entertainment, it doesn't happen overnight, does it? But it's well worth the journey, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is absolutely worth the journey. And you know, it's like anything. If anybody is organising a trip or even if you're just trying to get a bunch of people together to go skiing, is hard enough.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of, you know, get the money off people to sort of say, yes, we'll do it. And you've got 6 or 7 people you're chatting to about going on the holiday with. And by the end of it, maybe 4 of you might go, you know. And so it's always hard. But I think for both Ewan and I, the idea just stuck in our heads, and we just couldn't, you know, we couldn't get it out of our heads. So that was sort of the reason we wanted to do it. It was something that really struck a chord with the two of us.
And, yes.
And we went ahead and we did it.
Good for you. I mean, that's the way. If an idea sticks, then it means it's something that's gnawing at you. You've got to go and do it.
I mean, yeah, you do, and you don't want to sit back and think, "Gosh, I wish I'd done that."
No,
and you really don't. You know, regrets are just a waste of time.
Exactly.
And I think all of us, you know, it's great fun to travel, and it's much safer the world than people think it is. You know, you obviously want to avoid certain places.
Yes.
But, you know, most of the world is nice. Most of the 95% of people are nice, I think, around the world, and just want the same things that we all want.
Yes.
And so, you know, and certainly the places that we've been, I've never really come across anyone who's, you know, I've really felt threatened by.
Not like a scene after Deliverance. You're okay there.
Yeah, well, I'm still here.
Yes, so, exactly. You know. I mean, many remember you traversing. It's never looked easy. The treacherous terrains of countries such as Russia and Mongolia, in Long Way Round, Long Way Down, and Race to Dakar. I mean, the title of the 2008 adventure, by any means, certainly sums up your determination to get to your destination. But, I mean, can you cite any instance when you felt neither boat, bike, or indeed elephant was going to get you there?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly on you know, we had times on Long Way Round and Long Way Down where I think on all the trips where you were sort of despondent and you think, Christ, what am I doing here? Why? You know, and you know, there were some dodgy moments, like when I was in Papua New Guinea, I was on a motorbike and came around the corner and there was a roadblock with guys with big machetes demanding money off us, otherwise they're going to hack us to pieces, and ending up arguing with them. you know, and I remember afterwards thinking, why did I argue? You know, what was I thinking of? You know, so there are definite moments where you just feel, not that you want to give up, but that you just don't want to be there, or you want to get out of that situation. But then, you know, a lot of it is to do with that's what you're looking for, a little bit of adventure. And you know, certainly in Mongolia and Papua New Guinea and other places, you suddenly get it. I remember on the By Any Means ones, it was pretty much any boat that we got on tried to kill me. Or they just tried to sink or crash into rocks. Or I had real bad luck with boats, really did.
The elephant's a bit more helpful.
Yeah, elephant was nice, a bit slow, but nice, you know. And think when, you know, when horses go along, they try to grab a mouthful of grass. Well, elephants try to get half of trees and kind of rip them down. But I remember the boat. One of the boat trips that we took was a disaster. Was we were trying to get from this island just out off Singapore to go to Borneo to do a UNICEF project, and you know, a whole ton of people had been organised, and we were going to go up this river on these speedboats to get to this. Far reach out place in the jungle to give kids a vaccination, and so the boat arrived. And that morning, I remember looking over and thinking, "Christ, there's a pirate boat out there." And the guy that we're staying with said, "No, that's not a pirate boat, Charlie. That's your boat that you're going to take you to Borneo." And I was thinking, "Oh my gosh!" It was this old dhow that looked like it had seen better days. So we kind of went back on it. We've been reassured that the pilot was a really nice guy. He had a map, which was, you know, a bonus. And so I remember climbing onto the side of the boat, and I remember a whole chunk of the rail came off as I was trying to get onto the boat, and I thought, oh, this isn't good. Got on the boat, there was fuel and food and all that kind of stuff, and we went out about an hour and a half out to sea. We hit this massive wave, and the captain came scuttling up and said, "Charlie, look, I think we're in real trouble. We're going to have to turn back." And I said, "No, we can't turn back." He goes, "No, come down and have a look." So I went down into the hull of the boat, and there was all this water pouring into the boat. And I said, "Okay, right, let's go straight back." So we went straight back to this island. I got off as quickly as possible. They gave us a lift off the boat, and they put the lifeboat into the water, and that sank as well. So I was never more grateful than to get off that boat, I must say.
Yeah, boats doesn't seem the way at the moment, does it? My goodness, that challenged you to the hilt.
But you just think, oh, Christ, this could have happened 200 miles out to sea and we would have been stuffed.
Well, exactly, you know? Yes.
And then we got on a few other boats on the trip, and just every time the boats tried to kill me, it was just, I'm sure Russ was trying to, you know, get rid of me. Or
there was a boat
like
vendetta against you. Now, of course, you mentioned UNICEF there, and obviously it features, and you've created a great awareness of UNICEF through the programs you've been doing. How long have you been working with them?
Well, we've been working with UNICEF for, I've been with them for, well, since we did Long Way Around, which is sort of 2004, 2005. I'm an ambassador for UNICEF now, which I'm very proud of. And you know, the work they do is fantastic, and they, you know, they tackle the big problems of the world, and you know, they work very closely with governments around the world to make sure that child policy and child education and child freedom is looked after, you know, so that children are allowed to have the right to have the childhood.
Yeah, it's crucial, isn't it? It's great work that you've been doing with them. And I mean, talking of other organisations, we've discovered over the years that hundreds of great actors, explorers and adventurers are in fact dyslexic. Yeah. And as one fellow dyslexic to another, why do you think there's been so many examples of dyslexics that have proved their talents and skills in this way?
Well, I think there are not just explorers, but there are, you know, a huge amount of entrepreneurs have dyslexia. You know, you look at Richard Branson, you look at Theo from Dragon's Den, you look at Einstein. I mean, the list is endless of people who have dyslexia who have become very successful. And I'm sure a lot of it is to do with the fact that when you're struggling away in school for reading and writing and all that kind of stuff, you have to sort of think outside the box in order to get by. So you know, you don't fit into that square hole because of dyslexia. So you spend all your time sort of being very creative to get around a problem, and I think that makes you very. I think it makes dyslexic people very, very, very resourceful, and so I think that is what defines them and what separates them from the rest of the world. You get very artistic people, you know, you get great filmmakers, you know, the list goes on, great actors, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
Definitely. I've read somewhere it said they're free thinkers. That's a nice way.
Well, I think it's just thinking through desperation is what it's mostly like. You go, Christ, there's a huge problem here, I've got to get around it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, an enormous amount of comedians are dyslexic as well. You know, you look at Ross Noble and, you know, just to name one of them, there's loads of them. You know, Eddie Izzard, it just goes on and on.
Yeah, Robin Williams, I think, is as well. So, yeah, I mean, definitely thinking out the box has certainly helped you to get out of a number of scenarios there. But
half of that is just necessity. And, you know, necessity is the great mother of invention. It's amazing how... But there are different types of people. Some people can be very calm in dodgy situations or difficult situations. And so some people react differently.
That's
and
right.
I think, you know, over the years I've learned to sort of, you know, go with the flow a little bit and not react too quickly.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? We all tend to want to jump up in the air and panic, as they say. But, I mean, your DVD and best-selling book sums it up very well, by any means.
Yeah.
And also your let's just do it approach. I mean, that sums up a dyslexic attitude to me. Do you think that's why many of your fans relate to you? Do you think that's a dyslexic trait? Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, if you're told that, one of the big problems about being dyslexic is if you don't get the right help, you know, if you're told enough times that you're thick, then you know, it makes it very difficult for you. You know, so I mean, when I was a kid in school, it was barely anybody knew about it. I mean, I was very lucky. I was in America and I was diagnosed when I was very young. But you know, lots of people, and there's still lots of people now, even, you know, people who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s who still find it incredibly difficult to read or haven't, you know. And what's great is that if you meet someone and you can identify their problem, you say, you know, I think you're a little bit dyslexic, I think you should go and have yourself seen to or something like that. And then they come back to you and say, Christ, I thought I was the only one who was forgetful and couldn't spell and, you know, all these different things. He said, but there's loads of us out there.
You realise there's so many of them out there
as well. And everybody has a little bit. It's amazing how many people have it.
Yes, that's right. And it's a form of gift in certain ways, I think, isn't it? But, I mean, what did you hope to achieve when you set out on the adventure of becoming president at Dyslexia Action?
I think to have a little bit more awareness and for let people know that it's out there and that, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, how bad it is. You can always, there's always a way to get around it. Like when I write my books, I've got a friend of mine who I work really closely together to help me write my books because I'm not capable of sitting and, because I can't spell, I can't construct a sentence, but I know exactly what I want to say and stuff. And so between us, we've worked out a system that works. And I think, you know, just to sort of say, look, it should never stop you, you know, any disability should never stop you.
It's a great attitude, actually. It's interesting to hear that for any dyslexic book writers, because it's a great means of expression, but it could hold you back thinking that maybe you're not capable. But you can always work with someone, as you say.
Yeah, you can. And, you know, there's a great app that you can buy on your phone, which is called Dragon Dictation.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. You just talk into your phone and it writes it for you.
Mm.
And which is brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And then you can... You just put it into your email or text message or Facebook or Twitter, and it has direct links for you. I mean, it's brilliant. You just sit there chatting away, and it writes it all down for you. It's fantastic.
I love that.
Make sure you check it. I've
written it down.
It.
Oh yes,
because it does occasionally, you know, put the wrong word in occasionally.
Be like predictive text gone wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But and I have it on my. You can buy it for your laptop as well. You have to buy the system for your laptop, but you get a little headphone and you can chat away and open and close folders and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, there are amazing things.
The help is there if you know where to look. But of course, talking of literacy, you've been involved in the latest charity appeal, It's Me, and you support the Partnership for Literacy. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Dyslexia Action, I'm president of Dyslexia Action UK, and you know, I can't spell any of those words, but I am president. We're always trying to put systems into schools to try and make it easier. you know, one of the big things is you know, anything like this costs money. So to try and streamline it and to make it as efficient as possible, to try and empower the schools to be able to take a system on and use it for themselves so that they can use it internally you know, without too much help from the outside to keep costs down. You know, all those things help to make it easier. And you know, and that's why we're always looking for money to in order to be able to help to get these systems into the schools, so that, you know, it's not a burden on people, because, you know, the governments and stuff are so strapped for cash that, you know, because dyslexia is a hidden disability, you know, it's not a physical one that you can see. You know, if you've got a dyslexic person sitting in front of the headmaster and says, oh, I couldn't do my English because I can't spell, I can't read properly, and it's really difficult, you know, it's difficult to understand that if you've got the guy standing beside him, he's got a broken leg and says, oh, sir, I can't play games. It's much easier to understand that, you know. So you know, kids and schools and teachers need as much support as possible to be able to help.
Certainly do, yeah. I mean, it's a great organisation. It's wonderful that you're helping there. I mean, you certainly know all about taking action, and I concur that, you know, dyslexics don't just sit back and accept things. We take the adventure. And last year on the show, we had Shane Lynch, a fellow dyslexic and a motor enthusiast. I mean, how did you find your way into motorsports? Was it something you could always do when you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, my love affair with motorbikes started when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And the first bike I ever got on was a little Honda Monkey, and I immediately fell off that, and then I was hooked for life. You know, I thought, right, this is what I like. So I've always been into bikes, and I don't know, I suppose it's a bit like someone who just loves horse riding or loves playing tennis, or, you know, you find the one thing that just turns you on, and bikes turn me on. So they've always been a part of me. You know, people say, what do I do, you know, to relax and you know, as a hobby? You know, when I'm not making TV shows with motorbikes, I go off racing motorbikes. You know, or I go with the kid. My two daughters, Dune and Kinvara, who are 14 and 15, both ride motorcycles.
Ah.
And they love it as well. So whenever we can, we go off and ride motorbikes.
Brilliant. I think a lot of people would relate to that, you know, letting off some steam, getting on the motorbike. You can't beat that feeling, especially on a day like today. Beautiful.
You know, motorbikes are fantastic. They give you a great feeling of freedom, and you can sort of go. And I think it's different. Riding motorbikes is different to driving cars. You know, I think to a degree you have to drive a car, whereas you choose to ride a motorcycle. And I think that's the big difference, you know.
Yes, it's not just about getting from A to B, is it? It's about the whole experience, really.
Yeah, and how you get there. And, you know, the more different types of bike you have, the happier you are.
Absolutely. I mean, many people associate bikes with the hairy bikers, who I believe you've met. But
yep.
Here's the pun, and you're not allowed to groan. But when travelling on your bike, can you cite any hairy moments that stay with you? And just how hairy have things
that
got?
That was dreadful.
Oh, well, I think I'm...
No. I mean, the boys are great. They're lovely, and I know them very well, and they're great cooks, and they've got a great little gig going there. I love it. But I mean, there are always hairy moments when you're on a bike, and I talk about this a lot in my speaking tour that I'm doing at the moment, and you know, we go through all the sort of dodgy moments and all the kind of little bits and pieces that sort of happened along the way on motorbikes and stuff. And there are loads of them. I mean, I did the Dakar Rally, which is one of the toughest races in the world. And there was a lot of very dodgy moments there. And I ended up breaking my hands and having a real disaster, and a very painful disaster. But I speak about a lot of that on the tour. And there's some horrible moments which turned out very, very funny.
So, we look forward to hearing all about that.
It's going to be great fun.
It's going to be great. I mean, just as an aside, but you do know what it's like to have experienced all sorts of things. And at the same time as you became president at Dyslexia Action, you also went to Afghanistan to visit the troops.
Yes, and we did. We took the speaking tour to Afghanistan, actually, and did four shows in Kandahar and Camp Bastion. And visit the troops and spend a lot of time visiting all the different squadrons and all the different things that people do out there, and You know, it is unbelievable what goes on out there. It is mad.
Very crazy. Humbling experience, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's you know, the airfield is the runway is as busy as Gatwick Airport. And, you know, but you don't see any commercial airlines. It's all drones and helicopters and jets and huge Hercules transport carriers and all this kind of stuff. I remember one time we were looking at the tornado ground crew. We were meeting the ground crew, and they were chatting about what they do here and stuff. And as we were talking to them, these four Black Hawk helicopters came flying over with guys hanging out with the machine guns, you know. And they're all dolled up with missiles and all that kind of stuff. And we're looking up at them, and one of the tornado pilots turns up and says, "Yeah, look at that. It looks just like a war movie." And I remember Ross looked at him. He said, "What do you mean it looks like? It is."
Yes, it's happening now. Oh, my goodness.
But, but they're lovely guys. And, you know, what astonished me was how young everybody is and, you know, the huge weight of responsibility that these guys have on their shoulders when they go out and patrol and, you know, with all the landmines and all the obstacles they've got to push through. You know, it's unbelievable what they do.
It's amazing. It really is. Hell of a job, isn't it?
But yeah, and so we did a very similar talk to what we're doing now so it's good fun. It's a good entertaining evening, and there's a lot of fun.
I bet they enjoyed that, the troops. Yes.
And a lot of stuff that goes on. So it is good fun.
It's fantastic. And I hear at each venue, Charlie Borman Live Tour will feature big video screens as well and some amazing clips of your adventures.
Yeah, it's a really interactive show. You've got photographs and video clips and all sorts of stuff piled into the show. So
brilliant.
So it's good. It's good. It's going to be good fun.
Yeah, it says that it's more interesting and entertaining. A collection of holiday snaps that you're ever likely to see. So I'm sure they're going to be more dramatic than most of our holiday snaps. But
well, you know, some of us can get into trouble in holiday. And, you know, sometimes the things that go wrong on holiday are often the bits that you most fondly look back on.
Yes.
And certainly laugh at the most.
Not at the time, but when you look back.
Definitely not at the time. But, you know, we've all had the odd blunder on holiday somewhere, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. We won't go into them on air, but yeah. Now, of course, I mean, people are going to be speaking. They can take questions. You're going to take questions, and people can ask you questions. Are there any questions that have left you a little speechless, or have audiences been pretty good?
They've been pretty good so far. A lot of people ask the question about my testicular cancer and but what's it like to have one ball?
And right.
The next part, I've got two because I've got one false one.
Right.
I asked my wife, should I get a false testicle after having, you know, one of my testicles removed? And she said, yes, as long as it's bigger.
So that one got a little bit near the knuckle.
I talk a bit about testicular cancer and how pathetic men are at looking after themselves and men's health. And we're doing a little bit of work this time with Movember, who in November you grow a moustache and raise money for.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes.
A massive successful charity. I think they've raised massive amounts of money in the last 6 years.
Yes, I've seen some people with these huge moustaches. They're quite it's quite a feat, isn't it? Quite incredible.
Yeah, it is. And it's very funny watching someone. You know, those first 10 days. Of watching them grow a moustache is quite painful.
Yes, it just won't happen for some people, will it? You know.
Yeah, no, but that's the fun of it. You know, the fun of it is to get out there, raise some money, grow a moustache, get involved. I mean, from the All Black rugby team to just about everybody along the way has given it a go and loves doing it.
So
it's a great talking point. One businessman was saying that he was brilliant because he was very worried that he was growing this moustache, and he had meetings to go to throughout the month, and you know, with this bit of stubble that he had, you know, and he would sit down and he would use it as an icebreaker in the meetings. He said, "Oh, look, I'm terribly sorry about this bit of bum fluff on the top of my lip, but I'm doing this for November," and then they would talk, and then he said half the time the meetings he did, people would then go and donate money, and so he said it was a real, you know.
Yeah, you can't ignore that sort of thing.
About growing it and thinking, you know, would it work for work? It definitely does.
It's a definite talking point. You might even need to get a little hairnet for it when it gets a bit too long and bushy.
Yeah, and you can go to Movember and they'll, you know, you can get a little comb and all sorts of stuff. It's brilliant. And you go onto the website and there's fantastic amounts of stuff that you can buy, which will, with T-shirts and belts and God knows what.
Well, as I say, it's, as I say in Monty Python, it's all getting very silly now, but it's for a great cause, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's going to be a fantastic night, because you're going to be at the Epsom Playhouse tomorrow night.
Yes.
And we look forward to seeing you then. But, of course, you've got the rest of the tour to enjoy as well.
So, yeah, and people can go to... people can go to, if they go to charlieborman.com, and they can go and look at the tour dates there.
Fantastic.
And all the other stuff that I'm up to.
Yeah, find out where Charlie's going to be, if you're going to be around people's area. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I hope it goes absolutely brilliantly.
All right.
And it just remains me to say, Charlie Borman, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for your time, and take care.
You too. And that was Charlie Borman, who's at the Epsom Playhouse Thursday, and on tour with his show, Charlie Borman Live.